If you know almost nothing about caviar, you know, the fancy fish eggs that go great with champagne, then you'll want to hear this episode. And a half hour from now, you'll know enough to make a confident, intelligent splurge that will make your significant other love you that much more. This is the Inside Wine Podcast. I'm Joe Janisch, a wine industry professional since 1996, giving you insider tips to make the right wine decisions. Today we are talking about something other than wine, although I think we will talk a little bit about wine. The subject today is caviar, and we are so lucky today to have an expert on the subject, Chiara Carfi of Calvisius Caviar. Chiara, welcome to the Inside Wine Podcast.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you, and I am really excited because I don't know a whole lot about caviar, and I've always wanted to know, but I never knew anyone to really talk to about it. So I'm glad we're talking together right now.
I'm excited to share the caviar verb with you.
Oh, that's good.
That's my mission in life.
Great. So there are so many different caviar companies. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about Calvisius and what makes Calvisius special and different, and maybe some reasons why a person should seek out your logo and the Calvisius brand as opposed to choosing another brand that they see in the shop.
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, it's an Italian brand. So as you know, Italians do anything fabulously.
Correct.
You know, I speak from experience being Italian myself. No, jokes apart, one of the major and most important things that sets Calvisius apart from a lot of the caviar brands that you'll see on the market is that we are a producer of caviar. So we have a farm where we raise a sturgeon, make them live a happy life, and this way create beautiful and pure caviar. So we basically control the whole production cycle, and this obviously allows us to offer to the consumer a product that is fully traceable and with full transparency on the methods of preparation and all of the elements that make up this very coveted product. A lot of the other companies that you'll see on the market are great companies, but they're traders. So they buy in the open market from farms like us. So the consistency and the quality of their products may fluctuate as the market fluctuates. So, you know, nowadays it's quite important to know where your foods come from, especially. We're talking about traceability also in wines, so we know how that's been a very important aspect of, especially of such a high quality product. So caviar is a point that makes us proud, and, you know, Most recently, we've introduced even more transparency than before because we've introduced a full barcode sequence on every tin that literally gives you every single piece of information on where that caviar from that tin comes from, down to the number of the fish that it comes from, to the name and the number of the fish it comes from. So it's like with wines, you have denominations of origin. That's what we can guarantee on our tins. Not a lot of other companies can do that.
Wow. So if you would compare it to a wine company, you would be kind of like the winery and the winemaker all in one. You have the vineyards, you make the wine, and you know where it's coming from. Okay, I got it. Great. Makes it a lot easier for me. Good. So you mentioned sturgeon, and I kind of knew that caviar came from sturgeon, but I never really understood exactly what a sturgeon was, and I don't think I've ever seen one. I know it's a fish. I know that much. But are there different types? Are they in different types of waters? Like, where do they come from? What does it matter? Which type of sturgeon? Are there different types? Give me a little bit of the background on the sturgeon.
Absolutely. This is actually a great question because, you know, we talk about caviar and everybody knows the word, but sometimes the most basic question is what people don't know, which is what is really caviar? What is it? So this is, like you said, sturgeon roe cured with salt. So sturgeon is a very funny looking fish that almost looks like a dinosaur fish. They're huge and they are indigenous from all of the northern hemisphere. So all the way from the Pacific coast of the United States through several different areas of the United States. Most rivers in the United States had indigenous species of sturgeon living in the wild, all the way through Europe and then all the way to Russia, Iran, and, you know, the famous provenance that we all heard about. Now, as we mentioned, there are different species. And species are a little bit, you know, since we're using wine as a comparison, are kind of what grapes would be with wine. So every species of sturgeon has its own characteristics, has its own age of maturation, which varies between 6 all the way to 22 years before a fish can be mature and produce eggs that then eventually become caviar. And obviously has very different flavor profiles. So you'll go from flavors that are notes that are very delicate, very buttery, very creamy in the white sturgeon, all the way through a gamut of note and taste and aftertaste, all the way to very strong, persistent flavors, for instance, with a Sabruga caviar. So just like with wines, people ask which one is the best one. There's no best. There's, you know, different characteristics, and it depends on what we like the most, whether it's a more delicate flavor or a more persistent one. So it's up to your palate, what you
prefer. Got it. Yeah, so it does sound like a lot like wine. Now, when you say the different types of species, are there dozens? Are there hundreds? Are there thousands? How many different species are there?
If I am not mistaken, there are 19 or 17 species in the world okay. that we know of. And we have or currently raise 13 of those. So the other outstanding piece of information about Calvisius, which makes it also such an exciting project, is that the farm was started in the 1970s, not to make caviar, but with the purpose of specifically raising sturgeon to repopulate endangered stock throughout the world. Oh. So in, you know, caviar being such a delicacy, it was, you know, in the 1900s, it was, as you know, the food of the czars, the food of the rich, the food of the well-off, the food of celebrations. Unfortunately, all of this brought to an overfishing of sturgeon in all of the areas of the world where it was indigenous, which put the species in danger of extinction. So in the 70s, when there was starting a, you know, the fish was starting to enter the endangered category, funded enough, United States, Davis University, California, started a project of repopulation of the white sturgeon, which is the species that is indigenous from the Pacific coast of the States. And they met with our scientists in Calvisano, Italy, northern Italy, and they found that the waters and the environment conditions in Italy were the perfect ones to raise a sturgeon, white sturgeon, and then eventually repopulate the Columbia River. So that's how the project started. From 6 fish, 6 specimens brought from California, they started raising them. And then about 10, 15 years later, we started making caviar and then little by little introducing more of the species, raising them and eventually started caviar production, which today accounts for about 20% of the world's caviar production.
My goodness. So, what a story.
Yeah.
Now the more you're talking, the more there are so many parallels with wine. It's like taking root stocks from France over to California. And this is pretty amazing. And I guess we could compare it to like the waters in Italy are like the terroir. It's like, that's the perfect place for the sturgeon. That's very cool. You mentioned something about beluga before. And this was something that always confused me too, because I saw beluga caviar and I always thought beluga was a whale. So then I thought maybe caviar came from whales. So I'm guessing that there's a two different fish species that have the same name, or what's going on with the beluga thing?
That is correct. Our beluga, the Huzo sturgeon, is a sturgeon, and it's actually one of the most coveted caviars because it's actually the one that takes the longest to mature. It takes beluga fish about 22 years before they produce roe. So that is a sturgeon. It is also a whale, but obviously we wouldn't be able to harvest eggs from a whale because they're mammal. I do not know why they have the same name, but yes, it is one of the most coveted caviars. It is one that unfortunately the FDA in the United States has banned from entering the country. So We do raise beluga sturgeon. We do make beautiful beluga caviar, but those who wish to taste it have to fly to Italy and visit us at the farm or anywhere in the country, because we cannot bring it into the States, unfortunately.
Well, as if we needed another excuse to travel to Italy. There it is. Well, thank you for clearing up the whole beluga confusion. I guess that they do name both of those beluga just to keep everyone confused.
Exactly. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so you mentioned that no caviar is the best necessarily. Again, like wine, everyone has their different palates and their different tastes and what they like better than others. But I have noticed that caviars do have different price points. And again, I know absolutely nothing. What makes one caviar more expensive than another? I'm assuming there's different levels or something that we're going to get into, but I'd love for you to just give us the primer on why one caviar is more expensive than another.
Absolutely. The first and foremost important aspect in this is the value of time, because depending on the species, as we mentioned, it can take anywhere from 6 to 22 years. So as you can imagine, the longer the wait, the higher the investment of time and resources and care for the fish that it takes before you can finally harvest about 10 to 15% of the fish's body weight. So having mentioned weight, the second variable is the size of the fish. There are some fish that are, about 50 pounds. There are fish that are up to 400 pounds. So depending on that, the yield, as you can imagine, from one fish is different. A third factor that will determine the cost of caviar, and you will sometimes see on label the words classic, royal, imperial. Each company has their own denomination on what we call in the industry grades. But basically, the higher the grade, the more valuable the caviar is, because the higher the grade, normally the larger the roe and the more intense the flavor of the caviar will be. So the grades are assessed through an evaluation that takes place both as caviar is being prepared. So when caviar masters harvest the fish, they will grade the caviar based on the size of the roe, on the color, and on certain specific factors that they will observe. Then they pack the caviar in the original tins, which are the large, beautiful metal tins of 1 or 1.8 kilos. Those tins are shipped over to us in the States. Once we open those original tins to repack for the final consumer, our caviar masters here in the States perform a second evaluation. So they reclassify the caviar based on what the caviar matured into. So that's why you read, Ocetra Classic versus Ocetra Royal. And so obviously the Royal will have a more powerful and intense mouthfeel than the Classic. Okay.
All right. I'm trying to make the parallels in my brain. So it's kind of like Chianti Classico Reserva. We age for a few more years, although I don't think there are any wines that we age for 20 years. So the caviar has a little more aging process, and now I understand why it's so expensive. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And I've seen caviar ingested in many different ways. I'm sure that there has to be the proper way. Just like when we serve wine, we like to open the bottle a certain way. We pour it in certain types of glasses. Is there like a special way that, is there a special temperature? Is there a special container or a spoon? Or like, what are the different ways that you would serve caviar and not look like a fool?
Well, enjoying caviar is, no fool. You would never look like a fool if you enjoy it. But so one of the important aspects is that caviar is a very delicate product, so highly perishable. And that's why, when you order from us, we have to lovingly package each tin in, styrofoam containers with ice packs. We have to make sure that the cold chain is never interrupted. So caviar is always kept at a temperature of about 27 degrees, 27 to 30, 32. So always it goes from our fridges to, you know, insulated containers, and then it always has to be kept in the fridge. And when served, it is recommended that it's kept on ice as you're serving it. So you'll certainly have seen those beautiful either silver or crystal or ceramic containers filled with crushed ice. And that's a beautiful way to present it to your guests. Now, you mentioned spoons, and that's a very, very cool point. Because given the delicate nature of caviar, no metal should ever be used to serve caviar.
Okay.
Unless it's pure gold.
Oh.
Because.
Okay.
You know, yeah, of course, it had to be that, right?
Yeah, I'll crack out my gold spoons. Okay.
Exactly, my pure gold spoons. No, there's actually a very cool reason, because any other metal will create a chemical reaction with saliva that will interact with the flavor of caviar, whereas gold is an inert metal, so it does not create that chemical reaction in your mouth. So that's why you would be able to use it. But normally, traditionally, the most common vessel is mother of pearl or bone, which are neutral and perfect, and they don't interfere with the flavor. The most fun way of tasting caviar, however, is the classic Russian way, which us cool kids call caviar bumps. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Oh, the bump. Okay.
We've had quite a few of those at our beautiful collaborations in the past. Because basically back in the day when buyers would go to the traders to purchase caviar, traders would open a large original tin, and they would use one mother of pearl spoon to give tastings to all of their clients, to all of the clients they had in front of them. So obviously, you know, you didn't want to share your spoon with others. So they would use one mother of pearl spoon to serve all the clients, and they would place a little dollop of caviar on the front of the hand between the thumb and the index, so that this way every client could have their own taste and then assess if that was the tin they wanted or if they wanted to taste something else. So in the modern culture, this has become, you know, a cool, engaging experience. Also because experiencing caviar without the use of a spoon and through your own skin allows you for the purest expression of the caviar flavors. Because when you use a spoon, your tasting experience goes through the texture and the temperature of the spoon as well as what you're tasting. Whereas your skin doesn't, you know, doesn't have any flavor, any smell to you. So all you're tasting is what your skin is containing, let's say. So that's why that is indeed the purest and best way to evaluate and taste caviar. And also,
that is very cool. Yeah. So I imagine then I want to make sure my hands are clean and I haven't put on any cologne, a splashdown cologne right before I do that. Otherwise, I don't think it would taste so good.
Yes, I don't think it would. But the front of your hand is always the cleanest part of your hand. So it should be safe. And especially these days with the amount of hand washing that we do.
Right. Right.
And another fun fact, Joe, is that good caviar should not have a persistent smell. So that's, you know, that's another factor of the evaluation, because just like wine, the tasting through caviar bump allows you for an examination of the caviar. So you're able to observe the roe, because when, you know, you want to make sure that there's no oil or broken eggs. And then the second step you do is smell it to assess that there's no, you know, fishy aromas or anything of that sort. Just like with seafood, if there is a very intense fishy flavor, it means that caviar may have suffered, you know, temperature or, you know, some sort of, it's not at its best quality. So in that case, we would not recommend eating it. And then finally, after the examination, you can finally enjoy
it. All right. So it sounds like temperature is pretty important. So if I want to serve caviar tonight, well, it's not going to be a party because we're still in the middle of a pandemic, but if I was going to serve caviar tonight to myself and my wife, would I want to wait as long as possible before I purchase it from the store? Do I bring it home? Can it sit in the refrigerator for a few days? Do I put it in the freezer? Like, what's the best way to store it once I've actually purchased it from the store?
once you purchase it from the store, the recommendation is to always check the expiration date, because I cannot speak for other companies, but when you purchase from us, as I mentioned, we pack the caviar from big tins. So the moment Joe calls Calvisius, places an order with us, we open the large tin and repack it in the size tin that you wish to enjoy. From that moment, the clock starts ticking, and it will continue ticking for 90 days. So that is what the recommended shelf life of an unopened tin is for us, if you keep it always, obviously, refrigerated. So you can definitely wait. Once you open the tin, it depends on the size of the tin, because the smaller it is, the shorter shelf life it has. It'll go anywhere from, you know, if you're eating an ounce or 50 grams, we would recommend within 24 to 48 hours. Much larger tins can last longer, you know, even up to a week or something once they're opened. Okay. But again, what happens if it's still refrigerated is that eggs may break a little bit. So it changes the texture, flavor, you know, shouldn't be affected. But, you know, obviously just make sure that you assess, you smell it before you eat it. That's you know, okay. A foolproof way of finding out if it's still
good.
Got it.
All right. I have a feeling, though, if I'm opening up a tin of caviar, it's like opening up a bottle of champagne. The chances are it's going to be empty by the time the evening's over, I imagine.
Exactly. That's why we're like, yeah, it's not likely that you're going to have leftovers.
All right. So our listeners probably, now we're about 20 minutes in, and listeners probably saying, when are we going to talk about wine? So let's talk a little bit about caviar and wine. I know, you know, the classic matches caviar and champagne. I don't know exactly why, because again, I'm not a huge, I'm not really big into caviar until now, speaking with you, but maybe you could tell me, you know, why champagne is like such a classic match, and maybe give us some guidance on some other wines that could be really good with caviar.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, we absolutely have to change this lack of knowledge of caviar. We'll have to do something about it, Joe. Our next conversation needs to be in front of a caviar and champagne glass.
Okay, we can do that. Absolutely.
Yes, champagne is historically, it's the preferred combination with caviar because of a lot of similarities between the two products, but also the one of the elements that I prefer in pairing the two is that the bubbles will clean your palate, fill it with the aromas of the champagne, and prepare for the caviar tasting. And then once you have the second sip of champagne, the mix of the two, the aromas of the two, will create an explosion of flavors. It's kind of a one plays and balances off the other in the most delicate way. That is my personal favorite pairing because I feel it's the more seamless. Obviously, traditionally, as you certainly know, vodka is another very well-known pairing. In my personal experience, it's a little bit too strong of a flavor, and it tends to overpower caviar oftentimes. But, you know, it's a different style of enjoying it. We've also worked with some beautiful cognacs that pair wonderfully with caviar. And any crisp, minerally wine will play beautifully with the nutty notes of some of our caviars. So the fun part of this all is playing with the different styles of caviar and finding the perfect match with a perfect either champagne or wine. We've done that quite a bit with the Tétanger champagnes, and it's been fun to kind of, you know, figure out which caviar was best with which cuvée. So we did spend some time in doing this terrible homework
a time ago.
you know what? Exactly. We had to sacrifice for the cause.
So maybe some high acid minerally wines like a Chablis or Sancerre, those would be decent matches.
Yes, and if we want to go to Italy, I love Etna Bianco as okay. a match, because it has so much personality that it stands very nicely next to a good, maybe Ostetra, maybe a nice full-bodied caviar, because, you know, we can call them full-bodied too, although they don't, you know, it's a wine term.
Right. Any other matches from Italy in particular? I'm thinking like maybe a really nice Pinot Grigio, something like that. Any others?
That's a classic. A Vermentino from Sardinia would be wonderful. Well, you know, if we're talking about Italy, the most classic pairing is our version of bubbly, the beautiful Franciacorta wines that are, you know, also from an area that is very close to where the farm is. So speaking of terroir, they also kind of, you know, they share the same air. We cannot talk about terroir with a right. farm. They're under the same air and you know, weather, climate, environment. So that would be one of the most perfect matches.
Okay, also. And probably no red wines, most likely.
Red wines, maybe, you know, the lighter red
wines. Like a Beaujolais, wine, maybe. You know,
correct, okay. Yes, because you don't want the power of the stronger and most powerful red wines to cover the nuances of caviar.
Got it, okay. Now, I'm assuming since you're probably a caviar purist, so you would have caviar on its own, but I've also seen caviar used to elevate dishes. I just did a podcast a little while ago with a champagne expert, and he was telling me champagne with caviar on top of fried chicken, and I almost fell off my chair. I was like, what? Is that a thing? and apparently it is.
It is a thing, you know, a very outrageous one, but it's actually fun because fat and fat are wonderful together. You know, just like anything in life, the richer it is, the most gorgeous it is. So another example of fat and fat is on avocado, for instance. That's a beautiful pairing. Potatoes. The fun, either you know, baby potatoes cooked in the oven, baked in the oven, or if you want to do something more fun and casual, potato chips or even Pringles. A couple of years ago, it was, you know, the trend was having Pringles and caviar. I think it was launched at Food and Wine Aspen, and everybody was doing it. And that's, you know, that's a very fun way. And then there's obviously the classics, blini. And then, you know, the traditional historical, the caviar service that has all of the so-called accoutrements, which are the eggs, the onions, and all of those beautiful things. I mean, those are, you know, a lot of places will still serve it that way with blinis and the traditional accoutrements. The reason why they used to serve all of these items no longer really exists, because back in the day, caviar had a much higher salt concentration. So, you know, blending it with other elements would kind of make the flavor a little less stronger. Now we don't need to cover the flavor. So that's why our recommendation is to taste it as pure as possible, with a pairing that is as simple as possible, because you want to appreciate its flavors.
Right. Got it. Okay. Wow. I'm ready to like go run out and buy a tin of Calvisi's caviar now. You've convinced me. So any other tips for the, you know, the neophyte, the person like me who really doesn't know what he's doing, and, you know, I'm walking into the store and I'm going to pick out a tin. Any last minute thoughts before I walk in?
The one thing that I would recommend is always make sure that you buy from a farm versus a trader. Although, of course, there are some traders that are very reputable, you know, like the very famous Petrosians, you know, they have beautiful caviar. But to make sure, like we were saying in the beginning, traceability, make sure you purchase from a caviar. So, of course, Calvisius would be the best choice. But if you don't find that, just make sure that you're buying from a reliable source, and, you know, read up a little bit on sturgeon species, and make sure you're buying something that exists in nature, because unfortunately there's also a lot of mislabeling. So make sure that what you read on the labels are Ostetra or Sevruga or white sturgeon or Siberian, not strange names of hybrid sturgeon that have been mixed with each other to kind of create animals that don't exist in nature. So that is what I would recommend. Check where your caviar comes from. And then, you know, enjoy it in the purest way with a lovely, crisp and chilled glass of white wine or champagne or bubbles. And you have a perfect evening assured at that point. All you need is great company and voila. And there.
Absolutely. All right. Sounds great. All right. So if our listener wants to learn a little bit more, how can he or she get in touch with you and Calvisius? What are the best ways to connect with you?
So Calvisius has a beautiful website, which we proudly just launched a couple of months ago. So it's a very, very nicely done. It's calvisiususa.com. I'm not sure if, I mean, they can email me. I read all the emails that get on the website. So if you email hello@calvisius.com, I can answer any question. Any question on caviar, on sturgeon, and on Italy, what I can answer, I'll be happy to.
Great. Wonderful. We'll have all the links in the show notes. This has been great. Thank you so much, Chiara. I appreciate this.
It's been a lot of fun, Joe. I'm very happy. Thank you. I was honored to be a part of this project. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Oh, no, thank you. Thanks so much for listening. I hope this conversation with Chiara Carfi of Calvisius Caviar caused you to feel more comfortable and confident about caviar. That's a tongue twister. In all seriousness, I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please tell a friend and make sure you hit the subscribe button so you will get future episodes the moment they are released. And while you're waiting for that next episode, you can learn more about wine at wine365.com. There's something new there every day. Remember that wine is food, it comes from a place, enjoy it responsibly.